Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor.
And Gabe. And Connor, you've got some news.
Yeah. I've been vaccinated. Partially. I got my first jab in my left arm with the AstraZeneca vaccine.
And this was last week?
Thursday, yeah. And it.
How are you feeling now?
I'm better now. I really, if I'm totally honest, I would love to be able to say into the microphone here, oh, didn't do anything to me. You know, because when I talk to people about it, it seems like people, if they've had no side effects at all, there's kind of a source of pride. It's like, look at my, you know, strong immune system. I didn't feel it. Well, okay. I don't think it matters where you are, how physically fit you are. Some people have reactions, some don't.
Okay, so that's the side effects, the more superficial things. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Oh, psychologically, I'm on cloud 9, or as the Germans would say, cloud 7 for some reason. Here, it's a lower level of clouds.
They do say Wolke 7.
Wolke 7. Yeah, so yeah. I'm even higher than the German cloud 7. I'm up on cloud 9. No, it is psychological. It is so psychological. I was laughing and telling people, you know, a day earlier, I'd been really frustrated, really, I've said that on the show, with the German immunization campaign, and a prick in the arm later, and everything's rosy, everything's wonderful. I mean, I'm aware of how biased I've become, or how much my mental state has changed as a result. It just feels good, feels really, really good to feel like you are at the beginning of the end of your own personal pandemic, if that makes sense. Not the pandemic out there in the real world, but the way I experience it. Yeah, at the beginning of the end.
Great.
Okay,
great.
So that is.
I'll join you at some point. I'm a bit lazier when it comes to like setting things up, but I'll get there.
Also serendipity. Our city happens to have a Telegram account, unbeknownst to me. So similar to WhatsApp or Signal, there's Telegram. They sent a message out, and one of our friends happened to receive this message saying, "Hey, sign up here." And had he not gotten that message,
forwarded the message to you,
forwarded it to us, then I wouldn't be sitting here with the vaccination. And that's kind of how this campaign has gone. Yeah, but that is vaccination news number one, vaccine number one. A couple updates here on some other vaccines, and starting with one that we don't talk about very often on the show because we just don't have much data. That's the CoronaVac vaccine from the Sinopharm company out of China. Some fresh data out of Indonesia. On 25,000 healthcare workers, so at various hospitals throughout Jakarta, they're saying that when they administered this vaccine to the healthcare workers, that it showed a roughly 94% efficacy amongst those vaccinated healthcare workers. That is some good news that appears to be based
on
that's
a real world trial.
Yes. That said, I don't have access to this data. The Indonesian Health Ministry has this data. They're the ones proclaiming this or saying this. It is not in a peer-reviewed study. So why do I trust it? I kind of trust it because earlier, Indonesia came out and said that they only saw efficacy levels of roughly 64%, 65% with the same vaccine. And so now it looks like they're coming to different conclusions based on who's getting vaccinated. And it's a signal to me that they're giving good information. This is one of those vaccines that's been all over the place. Brazil did a phase 3 trial, came up with an efficacy of roughly 50%. So this one is still very much open, but this latest batch of data was pretty good on that one. Mm-hmm. Next news, Sputnik V. Again, we don't talk about it much on this show. For the same reasons that a group of about a half dozen researchers have written an open letter to The Lancet, to this journal, the same journal where the original Sputnik V efficacy results were published back in, I think it was February.
Remember? Yeah, the 91%.
Yeah. You and I were talking about that here.
Yeah, when it was hot off the press. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're saying, look, there are still so many unanswered questions with this phase 3 trial conducted primarily in Moscow. And why do we still not have information on this?
Well, the data's locked up.
That's part
of it. Nobody has access to the raw data.
That's point one. So these researchers are from the U.S. They're from the Netherlands, Italy, France. Point number one, their big complaint, give us the data. And they've made multiple independent requests, haven't gotten it. They keep getting the line, when the trial is completed, we'll give you the data. They still don't have the data. They're concerned that the goalposts or the goal of the trial was changed right in the middle of it. At first, it was supposed to be about what happens after the first dose. and then it became what happens after the second dose. That's kind of odd or unusual. What was the, you know, the logic behind that decision? Here, this one jumped out at me as being potentially very problematic, and they were really concerned about it. They said, or it says in that trial, when COVID-19 was suspected, participants were assessed with quote-unquote COVID-19 diagnostic protocols, including PCR testing.
What else is there?
including PCR testing.
There's one gold standard when it comes to diagnosing that disease, and it's the PCR test.
Exactly. And so they're saying, look, what were your criteria for people, first of all, coming in to get tested? And then what were they tested with if it wasn't PCR testing? That is still an open question. They had 22,000 people involved in this trial. I'll make this the last point. There are a lot of points in this kind of complaint. And to The Lancet's credit, they published this complaint as well. There were 36,000 individuals screened, and 22,000 were then randomized for the trials. Well, what happened with the other 14,000? And why were they not then included in the trials? What excluded them?
That doesn't seem very random anymore then.
It's acceptable to have... There are good reasons for not having certain people in a trial where you're going to inject them with a medicine that you're still testing.
Yeah, but if it's 14,000 out of 36,000,
right,
then maybe not so much anymore.
Right. You could suspect that perhaps only the healthiest of the healthy... you can come up with theories... Or you can look at the data, and again, the data is not there. The last, I guess I'm adding one final point here, is that the vaccine's efficacy was pretty much equally high in every single age group, which is just odd. It's unusual. It sets it apart from other trials. And also, it was so high that it led the researchers to say, look, this is too uniform. It would almost never happen this way in real life. A lot of issues like that. So that's the Sputnik update. Last update here is on Pfizer. And this is, I think, kind of interesting news, especially for me. You know, I just got the AstraZeneca vaccine. They're telling you wait about 3 months to get the second jab. Mm. In my case, it's going to be closer to 8 weeks. It's going to be in July. Pfizer, they're saying there is now a much stronger antibody response. They've measured this if you get the Pfizer BioNTech jab 3 months later, as opposed to just a couple of weeks later.
So, really? 3 months?
Yes. So up to,
12 weeks, just like with AstraZeneca, right?
Just like with AstraZeneca. It's a relatively small study out of the UK. They looked at about 175 people over the age of 80.
How much is the jump?
3.5 times more antibodies, these spike-specific antibodies. So that would lead you to think, well, that's a good sign. Obviously, you want those antibodies there, and so why not wait, you know, for this extra couple of weeks or extra 8 weeks?
How big was the test?
Only 175 people involved. Mm-hmm. 100 people had the traditional double jab after 3 weeks or the second jab, and then only 75 had it at 12 weeks. So again, very small sample size.
And the average among those 75 was that much higher than
3.5 times higher. What's weird, though, is the T cells, so they support antibody protection. Those actually, if you looked at the numbers, those looked better, as far as I could see, in the group with the shorter interval rather than the longer interval. So I guess kind of...
So what do you want more? More antibodies or more T cells?
Right. And how much does that truly affect real world transmission? And is it more important to get the second jab earlier, you know what I mean, to stop the pandemic, rather than hoping for the perfect antibody response?
Because what's going to happen in those few weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. And is your immunity strong enough to cover that full 12-week gap before you get this? So again, open questions, but an interesting little study out of the UK gives us an update on what to think about when we're thinking about Pfizer-BioNTech.
All right.
As well,
thank you, Connor. We're going to switch gears here for a bit and ask the question, are German families having as many kids?
Can I jump in and say anecdotally,
the pandemic?
I see fewer pregnant couples or pregnant women walking around. That's what seems to be.
That means you have an incredibly perspicacious eye, Connor.
Which means
because
the data doesn't.
Technically, in 2020, the birth rate declined in Germany by 0.6%. So it did go down.
Okay, so I'm just I'm confirming a bias. There's no way I can see that on the
streets
of Germany.
There is a big time however coming here, because if you compare that to other places in the world, for instance, China or the United States, where birth rates declined by 18% and 4% respectively.
18% in China, 4% in the U.S.
18% in Germany, 4%. And that's the lowest it's been since 1961 in China, and the lowest it's been since 1979 in the U.S. Elsewhere in Europe, in Italy, declined by 21%. So Germany declining that by only 0.6% means that it's almost increased,
that,
comparatively speaking.
That honestly surprises me. Because
it's a baby boom here.
you have kids, I have kids, and honestly, if I'd had the choice... You know, if family planning, if we were to sit down at a table over a cup of coffee and say, look, we're planning to have another child, my vote would have been to wait out the pandemic, so, at least especially in the initial phases where nobody had any information on whether pregnant women, could the extent of the infection or whether that would extend to the fetus, whether there are any long term potential consequences. Now we know a lot more and know that it's totally fine.
Yeah, that's operating under the assumption that the pregnancies that happened in 2020 and since December to February, it actually rose by 0.8%. That would mean that German families aren't worried about the coronavirus or not enough to have a kid. There is data that says people aren't worried. IVF pregnancies, the kind of pregnancy that you know, that doesn't happen by accident, they're up by 9% right now.
Really?
And economic data saying that pregnancy vitamins and baby beds, sales on those are skyrocketing. So okay. German families aren't worried right now.
Okay, we reported on this show about how there was a general trend around the world if the pandemic prevented people in a country from accessing contraceptives, then the number of babies being born understandably went up. And if that wasn't the case, generally it went down. But now, really, really fascinating, actually.
Yeah, the IVF thing, that kind of nailed it for me. 9% increase on those kind of pregnancies.
Clearly.
Because those are the ones that have to be planned.
Right.
The other data, you could argue that, well, people just...
I don't know.
It just happened.
Yeah, more working from home, more...
It just happened.
Yeah.
More sex happening, more babies are going to be born.
Yeah.
But that one, yeah, clearly...
Okay, so at least mentally, psychologically, German parents to be are kind of over the pandemic, or they're not as fearful of it. They're ready to move on and keep having children.
You could speculate and say that based on the fact that the German government made it clear to people that even if they couldn't work during the pandemic, that they would still get money, that they would be kept afloat. Maybe that helped.
Yeah,
and the social welfare aspects of living here, childcare. Maybe. I mean, it's speculating, but maybe that's the reason why.
Any other topics you would like us to look into on your behalf and try to answer on the show, please get in touch. We're su@dw.com.
Science Unscripted.